Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all again for coming. I'd like to again thank the sponsors of the following shiur. The shiur is being dedicated by Morris and Doreen Sosnovich in honor of the teachers of the Beit Midrash for their contribution to the spreading of Torah in our community, as well as by Neil and Lisette Reines in memory of their dear parents, Moshe ben Shlomo and Avraham ben Yitzchak. So until now, this is a program about failure, and in many of the shiurim, we've been analyzing as to whether or not a particular story in Tanakh was indeed a failure, and often there is a bit of ambiguity as to who is at fault, or whether it indeed was a failure. Many of us have feelings for people like Shaul, who although are punished, have a lot going for them in terms of the way they acted. The story we are about to read is an abject failure. It is a horrific, abysmal story. Almost everyone fails except for the victim. And my hope with this shiur is that we can at least glean some lesson or insight into the nature of failure from the story. I am not here to defend anyone. And if we can't, then it's just a failure like the rest of the things we've been discussing today. For a bit of background, I don't know how many people were here for Rabbi Tarchiner's shiur before the break. The background of our story, which is about Amnon and Tamar, is the story of David and Bathsheba. And briefly, the Tanakh describes how David wanted to court Bathsheba. Unfortunately, she was already married to Uriah HaChiti. And to make a long story short, and again, I refer you to the previous year, which begins on page 21, David enlists Uriah HaChiti into the army. He's killed by the nation of Ammon. He then dies, and David then marries Bathsheba, which is a very difficult story to discuss, again, referring back to Rabbi Tarchiner's shiur previously. The reason I mention that is because in source number one, the prophet Nathan goes to David and says to him as follows. He gives him the following parable. Take a look in the English translation in source number one. The Lord sent Nathan to David. He came to him and said, "There were two men in the same city, one rich and one poor. The rich man had very large flocks and herds, but the poor man had only one little ewe lamb that he had bought. He tended it, and he grew up together with him and his children. It used to share his morsel of bread, drink from his cup, and nest on his bosom. It was like a daughter to him." And we read this story and we have so much affection and pity for this man and his land. "One day a traveler came to the rich man, but so he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. David flew into a rage against the man." David HaMelech gets all upset and said to Nathan the prophet, "As the Lord lives, the man who did this deserves to die. He shall pay for the lamb four times over because he did such a thing and showed no pity." And of course, the punchline is, Nathan the prophet said to David, "That man is you. You are that man. You took advantage of someone who was so much less fortunate than you in this story that Rabbi Tarchiner just discussed. And I'd like to call your attention to the line I put in bold. He shall pay for the lamb four times over because he did such a thing and show no pity. David HaMelech says the person who did this deserves four times the amount of pain they meted out on this poor individual. The Gemara says that David HaMelech's prophecy turned true. He suffered four different tragedies in his family because of what he did. And one of them is the story that we are about to learn together. If you take a look in source number two, it's the Gemara on Yoma 22b. Says the Gemara, it's actually discussing how the Gemara has this like concept that Shaul HaMelech, we read about previously, is punished for what he did, his mistake, and David HaMelech is not punished, or at least he doesn't lose his kingdom. And the Gemara says, "Va'ikanami masa Bathsheba." What about the story of Bathsheba? The story of David again enlisting Uriah HaChiti into the army so he can marry Bathsheba. It says, "Hatam ifer umine." No, there indeed he was punished. "Diksiv beta kivsa yishlarleim arbatayim." And for the lamb, he will pay four times the amount. "Yeled," a child, the child that David has with this woman dies. That's punishment number one. "Amnon," his son, who we'll read about shortly, also dies. "Tamar," who will also, again, read about shortly, is the victim of a horrible rape. Ve'Avshalom, another son of his who again dies. And I bring this to you for the following question. Is it fair, in the story we are about to read, of a horrific rape of an innocent woman, of Tamar, is it fair that she should be punished for what David HaMelech did? And I don't have a good answer for you. I, in some way, again, in God's judgment, it does fit. But I can't begin to understand why. And I think, as we read the story, part of what we're supposed to be thinking is, there is no reason this should have happened. This is horrible. This is a horrific story. The Tanakh is meant not to excuse anybody's behavior, to paint for us what can happen to an innocent victim if indeed you are not careful. And with that, we begin with source number 3. Take a look in the English. It's on the bottom of page 24. This happened sometime afterward. Again, after what? After the story we just referred to. Avshalom, son of David, had a beautiful sister named Tamar. Now, keep in mind who Tamar is the sister of. It becomes important. And Amnon, son of David, became infatuated with her. At this point, is Tamar Amnon's sister? Sounds like she's not, right? Avshalom has a sister. Amnon is infatuated with her. Amnon was so distraught because of his, it says here, half-sister, we'll refer to that later, that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. Now, again, just to take a step back for a second, what are Amnon's options here? There's somebody that he likes. He is obsessed, infatuated with Tamar. What could he do? What are the options he has in front of him?
Go away.
Go away, okay. That's a good one. Anything else? Can he marry her? That is an interesting question. Is he indeed related to her? We will see from the story, at least in Tamar's view, it seems that yes, he could have asked to marry her. It seems he could have asked to marry her. He doesn't. He doesn't do so. It seems impossible for Amnon to do anything to her. Why? I don't know. It seems impossible. Amnon had a friend named Jehonadab, the son of David's brother Shema. Jehonadab was a very clever man. He asked him, "Why are you so dejected, O prince? Morning after morning, tell me." So he sees Jehonadab, who's sick in love and seems like he can't do anything about it. And he says, "What is bothering you? Why are you so sad?" Amnon replied, "I am in love with Tamar, the sister of my brother Absalom. I'm in love. I am lovesick." Jehonadab said to him, "Lie down in your bed and pretend you are sick. When your father comes to see you, say to him, 'Let my sister Tamar come and give me something to eat. Let her prepare the food in front of me so that I may look on and let her serve it to me.'" And that is Jehonadab's advice. You'll go, you'll pretend you're sick. You'll ask your father David if Tamar can serve you. Doesn't exactly explain what will happen from there. It's sort of up for us to interpret. Now, is Jehonadab guilty at this point? Has he done something wrong? Okay, well, in terms of the advice itself, is this wise advice to give to someone in this predicament? Now, I would for sure think not. So how could you responsibly advise someone who is so infatuated with a woman that they are sick over it to do something like this? Can't you see what will happen? If you look in the Mefarshim, they take different perspectives on this. Again, Jehonadab is described as a very wise man. A very wise man. So what does that mean, he was wise? You take a look at the Rabag, he was wise. If you look at the translation, Jehonadab, in source number 4, page 25, Jehonadab was a very clever man, meaning to devise tactics to perform evil. He was wise. He was good at thinking of ways to sin. That is why he's described as wise. Jehonadab was bad in his advice. If you look at the mob and he says, no, that's not, Jehonadab never thought that Amnon would do what he indeed ended up doing. Says the Rambam in source number 5, take a look at the English. Truthfully, Jehonadab didn't consider the possibility that this atrocity would be performed. He only put words in his mouth, which from then the king we recognize, that Amnon yearned for Tamar's sister, and was deathly ill over her. Right? There seems to be some sort of miscommunication here. For whatever reason, we don't know why, Amnon thinks he can't ask his father David to marry this woman. And he just can't do it. And so in the Malbim Zoo, this was a way for him to communicate to King David that I'd really like to marry Tamar. Again, in terms of whether that's legitimate, is that a good motivation for marrying someone? I don't know. It certainly beats what ends up happening. But whether or not Jehonadab had proper motivation, ultimately, can we excuse what he did? I would argue that even if he didn't realize this, maybe he should have. If someone's so sick that they're infatuated to the point that they want to do something like this. So again, failure number one, I believe, Jehonadab, in giving advice to, giving this advice and enabling Amnon to do this. Okay, so this is a great question, which brings us to our next two sources. Who is Tamar? And what is her relationship to Amnon? There are points in this narrative where Amnon and Tamar refer to each other as siblings. And that is one indication. However, there are other points in this narrative where it seems that she's only Absalom, Amnon's brother's sibling. And that being said, as we will read, Tamar ends up begging for mercy and says, just marry me. Don't do this. So it would seem, what'd you say?
Stepbrothers.
Okay, that would be, well, half-sister is different because a half-sister you cannot marry. You cannot marry your half-sister. A stepsister is an interesting suggestion. So let's see what the two suggestions in our sources. If you look at source number 6, and it's again a pretty problematic source, I will tell you, I wanted to sort of gloss over this idea. But I ended up thinking that it indeed is very relevant to this discussion. So at the very least, you can't accuse me of trying to get over all the tough topics. At least we're addressing them. You take a look at source number 6, the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Tamar bat Yifat Toar Haitza. Tamar was the daughter of Yifat Toar. The idea of Yifat Toar in the Torah is a very difficult one. It's a very challenging one. The best way I can explain it is as follows. The Torah recognizes that when people go to war, they participate in all sorts of horrific behavior. They're killing, they're incensed with a rage to defend themselves. And in that context, it's inevitable that people will commit immoral actions. And so much so that the Torah says that if you capture someone in war, a woman who you are infatuated with, you have the right one time at the moment of the battle to be with that woman, to have relations with her. And the Torah prescribes a whole process that after you do that, you are responsible for her. You have to, if you want to continue to be with her, marry her. She has to go through a conversion process. There's a process of mourning for her parents she might have lost during the battle. So what the Gemara is suggesting here is that Tamar's mother was not Jewish, and therefore she, although a biological daughter of David HaMelech and a biological sister of Amnon, is legally not considered related to them, and therefore even though they were blood relatives, Amnon was permitted to Tamar. Why do I think this is significant? The idea of Yifat Toar is, although what was done was horrific, the Torah makes you responsible for it. If you are going to commit such an act to this woman, the least that you could do is make sure to then take care of her and bring her into your house. And this is exactly what Amnon fails to do in this narrative. Do we have a question? Yes. Okay, this is a very good question. It's a longer topic, but essentially, relations to a non-Jewish relative are not considered familial relations legally. They don't have what we call chayas. They don't have a familial tie to you. So again, we can discuss why that should be, but that is the halacha. If a person has a relationship to someone, if a blood relationship to someone who is not Jewish, it is not considered legally their sibling or immediate relative.
It's not incest.
Okay, so I will tell you, and I know some of you are disgusted by this, the Abarbanel cannot think that this says this cannot be. Number one, because would David, even if this is permissible, would David HaMelech do something like this? Don't we hold King David to a higher standard? Would he have possibly done something like this in an act of war? Furthermore, says the Abarbanel, what you are suggesting, which is, even if this is so, if the person converts right afterward, they grow up together, can it really be that they should be permitted? So your point is a good one, but what I want to get home is, according to the Gemara, Amnon and Tamar are blood relatives, but not legally related, and therefore, indeed, Amnon could have married Tamar. We'll take one more point on this, because it's not the main point, yes? So there, I think that they shared the mother. I think that would be the point.
No, but the mother, you mean Absalom also?
Absalom and this is a good question. Absalom and Tamar shared a mother. They both came from this Yifat Tor, yeah. She converts after and has Absalom. That is, okay, we can discuss the ins and outs of this question. Okay, take a look at it. You look in Tosfot in source number 7. Again, it's a sort of perverted story. I understand all the objections. So Tosfot suggests essentially the bottom line is that they were not relatives at all. But they grew up in the same house. Essentially. Who is Amnon's mother? Okay, so that's a good question. Amnon's mother is Ma'acha. Amnon's mother was the daughter. Oh, sorry. Absalom, maybe just backtrack for a second. So Absalom's mother, the Tanakh tells us, is Ma'acha, the daughter of the king Talmai of Geshur. Amnon's mother is Achinoam HaYisraelit. I don't want to spend too much time on this. The other perspective here, if they are permitted to each other, is that the term sibling in this story is colloquial. It doesn't literally mean that they were siblings. It means that since they grew up in the same household and they had, you know, and their brothers were siblings, essentially, they shared a brother, they referred to each other as siblings. Let's move on to source number 8. This is the scene of the crime. Take a look at Pasuk Vav. I'm actually going to read it in Hebrew, because it has significance. Vayishkav Amnon vayischal. So Amnon did exactly what was told. He laid in his bed and he pretended he was sick. Vayavo hamelech l'rotzo. The king came to see him. Vayomer Amnon l'melech tavona Tamar achuti. My sister Tamar shall come. Utlavev le'enai shtei livivot. And she should make for me 2 livivot. What do we usually translate livivot as? Latkes, right? Now, I don't know if it really means latkes. If it does, I don't think anyone's going to want to come and have latkes when they get home after this lecture. But I do want to point it out, aside from the Hanukkah connection, if you take a look at the word that Yonadab told Amnon to use, it was not levivot. It was actually briah. Briah comes from the word havra, as a sort of meal that you give to someone to help them when they are ill. What does the word levivot have in it? If Amnon Bazak points out, Lay. He cannot, he's so infatuated over this woman that even in his expression of the food that he wants her to prepare in front of him, he uses the word lay. So this is what he tells to David, the Evram Yada, and I will eat from her hand. So what should David do?
Send
someone else to do it at least. Right? You have to send her to make it in front of him?
But he didn't know, right?
True. But doesn't it seem like a bit of a silly request to have, please send this woman to cook the food in front of me and then feed it to me? Again, I don't know what David thought, but I think he could have been a bit more careful, in my humble opinion. Okay. So, Vayishlach David al Tamar abayt lemor. David sends for Tamar and says, L'china beit Amnon achicha. Go to the house of Amnon, your brother, again referring to him as her brother, which again illustrates this question. Va'asilo habriyah, and make for him the food. And indeed, Tamar is faithful, and she listens to David HaMelech, King David, and she goes to help Amnon. Va'telech Tamar beit Amnon achiha. Amnon goes to the house of Amnon, her brother. And she takes the dough. Again, the word livivot. She makes the cakes. And she takes the cake. She starts preparing them for him. She says, "I don't want to eat." He refuses. And now Amnon says, and Amnon says, "Everybody out. I want all the people in the house out," and everybody leaves. So Tamar is outside his room. She's made the food. She's made the meal for him, and she's standing outside the room. And Amnon says, "Come into my room and give it to me." Again, a very disturbing scene. And I will eat from your hand. And Tamar, unfortunately, listens. She obeys and she's faithful. She takes the cakes that she has made. She brings them to Amnon, her brother, in the room. Now, I know many of you are thinking, brother, brother, brother. Doesn't it seem like it's the brother? I think if you indeed take Chazal, that indeed he was not legally her brother, what the Pasuk is pointing out here is, but they had this relationship. There was a trust. We grew up in the same house. I can trust you. I don't need to worry about you, but something might happen to me. Tamar is saying, "This is my brother. I'm just going to take care of a family member," regardless of whether or not there was a blood relationship. Unfortunately, it does not end well. She goes to serve him, and he grabs her. Come lie with me, my sister. And pay attention, she says the word al again and again. Don't. Al tani, thank you. Kilo yasa came be Israel. Don't afflict me, because such a thing shouldn't be done in Israel. Al tasen velazot. Don't do this horrific act. The ana olech et charpati. Where am I going to bring my humiliation? And you're going to be despicable in Israel. So for many levels, she's saying, this is bad to me. This is bad for you. This is just bad. Where am I going to go? Speak to the king. He won't hold me back from you. Tamar is unbelievable. He's even saying, this person who wants to afflict her, she's saying, I'll marry you. At least let us do this legally. Go to King David. He will give me to you. Amnon does not have of it. The law of Valishmoa Bekola, Bayechazak Mimena Vayaneha Vayishkavta. He does not listen to her. He grabs her. He rapes her. And he lies with her. Bayisnaeha Amnon. Now here's the crazy part. So this is really bad. Like, this is horrible. Horrific failure, rape, betrayal of trust, taking advantage of her. Disgusting. But it doesn't even end here. And this might even be worse. At least, again, in the eye of the victim. Amnon now hates her. He hates her a lot. Now the hate that Amnon felt for Tamar was even greater than the love he previously felt for her. And Amnon says, "Get out. Get out of my house. Go." Don't do this evil, which is even worse than the other one. This is even worse than what you did to me just a minute ago. Don't kick me out. He didn't listen to her. And if you look at the next Pesukim, he tells one of his Vayikra, Naro, he tells his lad, Get this woman out of my house. Kick her out. And sadly, take a look at Pasuk Yochet. She goes out, she walks out of the house, Balek Tonet Pasim. Ketonet Pasim, and I think that's relevant from Yosef, and Yosef is relevant, which we'll get to in a minute. She has this garment on her. Ki came to Bashna Benot HaMelech HaBtulot. That's what the daughters of the king were virgins wore. So what happens? His lad, his servant, kicks her out and slams the door in front of her. We had two horrific crimes here committed by Amnon. Number one, the rape itself. Number two, not only does he rape her, he doesn't even listen to her. He doesn't say, okay, I'll keep you in my house. Now this happened. No, get away from me. Now this is relevant for two reasons. If you think about stories like this in the Torah, stories of betrayal of trust, or where someone tries to force themselves upon another person and makes an advance, what other stories do we have?
Dina,
good. What's the other one? Yosef and Dina, perfect. And they're both alluded to here. The word ketonet pasim, this is the idea from Amnon Bazak, is the same clothing that Yosef wore, is meant to connect the story of Yosef. But what does Yosef do in this situation? He has the strength and the courage to say, no, I'm not doing it. And Chazal really heap a lot of praise upon Yosef for doing that. So number one, Amnon did not do that. But it's even worse, because what happens in the story with Dina? Shechem at least says, okay, I want to marry you. He takes responsibility for it. Now, I don't know what Dina wanted, but if she did, if in those times, if women in this situation were victims and no one would want to marry them, it's understandable that at least they can have a home if someone violates them, invites them into their house to live with them. And Shechem does that. And if you take a look at source number 9, this is what the Torah says. The Torah says that in a situation of rape, the Torah says that if the woman wants, the husband is obligated to marry that woman and can never divorce her. And Amnon doesn't even do that. He says, get her out of here. And I want to focus then. There's so much failure here. There's so much failure because I just want to make that my main point, and hopefully I will have time for some questions. There's so much failure here, but I want to focus on one particular point. And I think part of the failure here is the silence. In the aftermath of this story, what happens? King David gets very angry. And what does he do? We don't know. Nothing in Tanakh. Nothing. Absalom, who is very angry also, ends up killing Amnon. You know what Absalom doesn't do? He doesn't talk to Amnon. He doesn't talk to King David. No communication. There is complete silence. No one says anything. David doesn't say, Amnon, how could you have done this? Absalom doesn't say, I am angry at you for doing this. Nothing. Silence. But I think the greatest silence is Amnon to himself. If you look in Pirkei Avot, it's quoted in source number 12 here. Amnon is seen as the paradigmatic conditional love. And I wouldn't even call it love. Amnon hates Tamar after this happens. You know what that shows? That shows that this was just his urge. There's a pure physiological desire for him to be with Tamar. And he looks at Tamar and he sees his failure and despicable acts in her. And that's the source of the hatred. And that sometimes our failure, even if it results in a horrific act to others, is really emanating from a failure internally. It's a failure to live up to who we really are, to look ourselves in the face and say, I am in trouble. There's a problem in my life. I need to fix something. That's what Amnon didn't do here. That's what results in this horrific action. You take a look at source number 13. This is the Rav, Yosef Ber Salvechik and Al Tshuva. He hated her now with such a great vengeance, not because he suffered pangs of conscience, but because he suddenly realized not only that she was not beautiful, but how ugly and repulsive she was. Again, not aesthetically, but to him. His sin was an abomination to him. Because of it, he came to hate himself and subsequently hated her. Sin has a masochistic effect. Amnon hated himself and transfers his hate to Tamar, humiliated through no fault of her own. And I think the point then is failure can be a window into ourselves. And we can learn from Amnon to then say, the way to prevent this, the way to make sure things don't happen, is if we look ourselves in the mirror and say, there's something wrong in my life, and how can I change it before it gets worse? Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we have more time for one question, but otherwise we are out of time. Yes. I agree. I think the word ahava is used pretty liberally in that context. I agree. Okay. Thank you very much.